The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour in this Sunday night, the 22nd day of May. Our engineer Brian Graves is right across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the former third baseman for the Pirates, Mets, Tigers, Richie Hebner. In the second half, we'll talk to former Major League second baseman Brett Boone. He's got a new book out about his baseball family, and we'll talk to him about that. So sit back, relax, enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and much more. So stop by and give us a look, and then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at SportsTalk1240. And as always, all past shows can be heard on our website at www.SportsTalk1240.com. Well, my first guest had a real fine Major League Baseball career, playing 18 years, compiling a .276 batting average, World Series champion in 1971 with the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's presently the batting coach for the AAA affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays, the Buffalo Bisons. I welcome to the talk in New York sports tonight, Richie Hebner. Richie, good evening.
How are you, Bill?
Great to have you with us tonight.
Nice to be here.
Well, you were born in Massachusetts, of course, Richie. Who did you grow up rooting for? Is that a stupid question? Any favorite players, any idols that you had when you were a kid?
I tell you, my idol was Mickey Mantle. Being from Boston, I was a kind of a Yankee fan,
okay.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, see, yeah, everybody remembers. See, my problem was, Richie, I didn't see Mickey until 1967, 68, when he was sort of a shadow of his former self, but still the greatness lingered. A great man, Mickey Mantle. Now, Maury Wills was picked up by the Expos in 68 in the expansion draft. It created a hole at third in Pittsburgh that you filled. Now, you got off to a great start in your rookie season. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I had a good rookie year. You know, I look back, and I every once in a while somebody will bring it up to me. I hit 301 my rookie year and never got a vote for rookie of the year.
Terrible.
And I had like 460 at-bats.
Yeah.
I never got a vote for rookie of the year.
Terrible. Oh,
I didn't
man.
Lose any sleep over it, but, I mean...
Yeah, still. Yeah, but, I would too, Teddy, Richie.
Teddy Sizemore won that year.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, he had a decent year, but still, you deserve some consideration for sure. As I remember, I think you had a .400 batting average through the middle of May. As you said, you hit 301, 8 homers, 47 RBIs. That deserves some consideration, I would think.
Well, I thought so, but I guess shut up.
Yeah, terrible. Well, 1970 comes along, Richie. You put up similar numbers. You hit .290, 11 homers, 46 RBIs. You really killed the Cubs in those days. You hit .333 against the Cubbies. And the National League East was won by the Buccos that year by 5 games over the division rival, but swept by the Big Red Machine in the 70 NLCS. But you had a great series in that NLCS against the Reds, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a few hits, and that was our first year in the playoffs. I think a lot of people were just saying that, you know, we had kind of a young team. We had a young and an old team, kind of a mixture of teams. But Cincinnati beat us that year, but I think we learned a lot of things from that, because the next year we won the World Series.
You did, exactly. You were 6-for-8 with 2 walks in that NLCS, Richie. We got Richie Hebner with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. In 71, we'll talk about that, your batting average dipped a little bit, .271, but your power numbers increased. You hit 17 homers and drove in 67 ribbies. the Pirates, as we said, repeated as division champions and faced the Giants in the NLCS. Now, what do you remember about that series, Richie? Anything?
Well, the funny thing about it was we played the Giants 12 times that year. We only beat them 3 times.
Yeah.
Now we're going to play them in the playoffs, and we beat them. We beat them to get into the World Series. But, I mean, myself hitting 2 home runs in the playoff game off of Juan Marichal and Gaylord Perry to put us in the World Series, that's a good memory.
Yes, definitely. We were just going to mention that. A solo shot off of Juan Marichal, one Hall of Famer, to give the Pirates a 2-1 edge in the series. And then similarly, Richie performs more heroics in the NLCS with a 3-run homer off another Hall of Famer, Gaylord Perry, to tie the score. The Pirates went on to a 9-5 victory. And you played the Orioles in the World Series, and that certainly was a memorable World Series.
It was a great World Series. It's funny, the first 2 games, we got a butt kicked, and we were down 2-0. Then we go back to Pittsburgh, which was the first night World Series game, 1971.
Ah, okay.
And then we come back and win 3 straight. The 6th game, we lose in extra innings. In the 7th game, I think everybody realizes, Steve Blass, it was a 2-1 victory, and we went on the road. But Clemente was tremendous. Clemente had, I think, 450 that series.
I remember him and Brooks Robinson in that series, Richie, certainly shining for both clubs. Now you also hit a home run off another Hall of Famer in the series, Jim Palmer.
Yeah, that was a big home run. We're losing 11-0.
Yeah,
and I hit a 3-run home and made 11-3.
Well, you were closing the gap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, Danny Murtaugh came in to manage the club. What difference did Danny make when he took over the helm in Pittsburgh?
Well, he was a good guy. You know, we had a good team. He just made the lineup up, sat down, and just seen what we did. We had a good club.
You certainly did.
We really did. It was contagious. Everybody hit in that club.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a hit in that club. It was like it was unbelievable. That was probably. The Pirate teams in the back in the 70s that I played were a tremendous team.
They sure were. Let's talk about some of the guys on those clubs. It seemed like everybody in those days, Richie, had a good catcher, a good solid catcher. The Mets had Grody, of course, Bench with the Reds, a great Hall of Famer. But Pittsburgh certainly was no slouch behind the plate either with Manny Sanguian.
No, he was a good player, good offensive player, could throw guys out, had fun playing the game. He was a good catcher, no question about it.
Really?
Just behind Bench, you know. I mean, he wasn't a bench, but Manny Sanguin was a good player.
A real good bad ball hitter, too, right, Richie?
Oh, God. I tell you, throw the ball down the middle, you get him out.
Yeah.
Throw the ball in the dirt, you get him. He was as bad as Yogi was.
Yeah. Manny Sanguian, yes. Now, another great hitter on that Pirate club, a guy who probably, as you were talking about garnering some support for Rookie of the Year, probably should have gotten more support for the Hall of Fame, and that's Al Oliver.
Yeah, you know, he got 2,800 hits or something, or maybe even more.
Yeah.
But he never came close to getting the Hall of Fame. He had some tremendous numbers.
He did.
Great hitter. I played like 10 years with him, and he was a good ball player. Played first base, played outfield, could hit, could run. He did a lot of things, and I'm surprised he never got the votes that I thought he should have got.
Yeah, I don't know why, but that certainly is true, Rich. Now, you had another Hall of Famer at second base, Mazeroski. Talk a little bit about what Billy meant to the Pirate Club.
Oh, Maz was just a young guy, a quiet guy. I mean, everybody said he was a veteran of the team, but very quiet. Everybody followed what Maz did. Maz played the game hard. You play the game hard. It was a mixture. We come up, Manny Sanguin, myself, and Al Oliver. We were around Clemente, Stagio, Mazeroski, Gene Alley.
Right.
And the way they played, we had to play the same way. And that's how we became good.
Talk a little bit about Willie Stargell.
Great guy. Great leader. Friendly guy, had fun playing the game. I see guys now 2016. They just, I don't know, really had the, he had fun playing the game. I just don't think there's that many guys have fun playing the game anymore.
Doesn't seem that way, Rich. No, yeah, where it seems like you guys did. And Pop Stargell, certainly a great Hall of Famer. And then we can't forget in right field, number 21, Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, great player. I played 4 years with him. And, you know, he played the town of Pittsburgh. It was a blue-collar town, not real big publicity. I think if Clemente played New York, L.A., Chicago, he would have been a hero. And he was up against Mays and Hank Aaron, and they hit the home runs, and Clemente didn't. But Clemente was, if you saw Clemente every day, good player.
Oh, outstanding.
Great player.
Definitely. Now, in 1972, the Pirates win the NL East again, but they lose to the Big Red Machine, who had to be tough facing those guys all the time in the playoffs. You hit 19 homers. You batted for an even 300, sending the Pirates back to the postseason. 73, you hit 25 home runs, but one of the most memorables came against the St. Louis Cardinals. Do you remember the one I'm speaking of?
No, I don't.
Okay, two teams battling for first place in the St. Louis Cardinals. You come up in the bottom of the 13th inning in a game against Pittsburgh with a walk-off inside the park home run.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. I remember that. I got a good ricochet. Hit high in the wall in center field. Lou Brock was playing center field. It bounced all the way to right, and I got inside the park. That's right. I remember that now.
Yeah, not too bad.
No.
Yeah. Now, we look to 1973, and that's the year that the Mets surprised everybody by winning so many games in August and September to take the NL East crown. But in 74, the Pirates are back in it. Cardinals again. Richie Hebner comes up, hits a three-run home run off the mad Hungarian, Al Raboski, at Three Rivers Stadium. Remember that one?
I do remember that one. Yes, he threw hard.
He was a tough one.
Pitcher.
Yeah, he did. It wasn't all theatrics with Raboski. He could throw.
He was a tough left-hander. Yes, he was.
Now, 4 days later, you guys go into St. Louis. Jim Rooker matches up with Lynn McLaughlin of the Cardinals. Both guys pitching well. Now, the top of the 10th, Richie Hebner comes up and drives in Miguel DeLon for the only run of the game, and the Cardinals, they'd go on to win the division by a game and a half over St. Louis. That had to be some thrill with that base hit.
Yeah, you know something? You're bringing things up, but I do not remember. I do not remember that, but I guess it happened, obviously.
Sure did. Yeah, even if it didn't, let's say it did.
You're right.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Now, you kind of dropped off, Rich, a little bit in 75, and as it were in those days, God forbid it would happen today, they cut your salary in Pittsburgh. Now, you weren't real happy with that.
No.
Who would be?
No, I wasn't. I left after the 76 season. I became a free agent.
Right.
And, I remember the Pirates offered me a 3-year deal, and then Paul Owens called me from Philadelphia and offered me a 3-year deal, and the difference was night and day. And a lot of people in Pittsburgh did not like what I did, but I don't think you have to go to Harvard to figure out the difference in money. And I have to bring it up. It was money.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. It was money. And I didn't want to leave Pittsburgh, but the money was good in Philadelphia, and I said, wait a minute, I'm not that stupid.
Right.
I went to Philadelphia.
Right. The Pope offered it to you, and you took it.
Exactly.
Right. Which anybody would have done. I mean, and the fans and the sports writers in Pittsburgh, as you say, had a hard time with it, but they're not looking at, they're looking for the headlines. They're not looking to put food on the table.
Yeah, well, I did what I had to do, and I did it. Then I'd go to Philadelphia, win 2 years in a row in playoffs.
Not too bad. Yeah, Richie Hebner on Sports Talk 1240 tonight. Mike Schmidt, talk a little bit about Mike Schmidt. You still went to Philly, even though Schmidt was there.
Well, I went over there to play first base. I never played first, but I played first base, and Schmidt was at third.
Uh-huh.
Bo was at short. Teddy Sizemore at second. And it worked out good. I had 2 good years in Philadelphia, and I loved Philadelphia. It was close to home. I live in Boston.
Right.
A lot of family came down. And the third year, they brought Pete Rose in, and all of a sudden, I leave. I love Philadelphia, and it was a great town, great ballpark to hit in. And it just, 2 years was it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, that was one of those cookie-cutter ballparks, just like Three Rivers, so you had to be used to that. It was a veteran stadium in Philadelphia, and you had 2 good years there. As you said, you experienced kind of a renaissance at the plate, hitting .285 and hitting, how many home runs was it? Let's see. 18 home runs, 62 RBIs, and as you say, Philadelphia returns to the postseason again.
Yeah, 76-77. We just couldn't beat the Dodgers. Dodgers beat us both times. And but we got in the playoffs, had a good team. You look at that team, I think the 77-78 Philly team, I think was better than the 80 World Series team that won in Philadelphia.
We just
couldn't beat the Dodgers.
Right. So many classic ball players in that era you played in, Richie. So many great names, so many Hall of Famers. Now,
yeah.
As you say, Paul Owens brings in Pete Rose to play first base. That sort of makes you expendable. So he trades
it
you.
It sure did.
Yeah. He decides to turn around and trade you, but he trades you to the Mets, who in those days were not too good.
Not, you're exactly right. We weren't good. Matter of fact, someone mentioned that to me the other day, that it's tough play in New York and not 12 million people. I think we drew 720,000 people that year.
That's rough. Yeah.
We were bad. The only good thing about it was Joe Torre was the manager. Joe's a good guy. But you look at our lineup, God, we were down by a touchdown by the third inning every game. We weren't good.
I remember those days. It was rough. Richie was traded. The Mets sent Nino Espinosa over to Philadelphia for Richie. Now, the team consistently finished in last place, as you say. Joe Torre was the skipper, just starting out. Did you have any feeling that Joe Torre would be a Hall of Fame manager someday, Rich?
No, not really.
No, a lot of guys say that, yeah.
Well, he managed in, with the Mets, then with the St. Louis, then with the Atlanta. And then he became very rich and went to the Yankees. And they won and won and won and won.
And like you said, all he had to do was fill out the lineup card.
Exactly. They had a lineup that was pretty awesome. And he's from New York, and he was great with the media. He's a good guy. And the bottom line, he had a good team. Good teams, you win.
Sure.
Bad teams, you got a pink slip.
Exactly, and that's what happened to Joe Torre after a while. Now, there's a story I read, Rich, I don't know whether it's true or not, that you flipped off the fans at Shea Stadium at one point.
I probably did, but yeah. I didn't mean to. I look back, I'm going, well, that was a mistake. And, I admit it, it was a mistake.
You're not the first one, Rich, and you probably won't be the last.
Well, so. I mean, I'm from the East.
Right.
I'm from Boston, and I just, some people like New York, some people don't like New York, and I was not a real New York people. I'm not getting nothing against New York, but I played in the blue collar towns, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Philadelphia.
Right.
All of a sudden you go to New York, the bright lights, and, we're competing with the Yankees, and we were terrible. We won one game a week with the Mets. Christ, that was a celebration.
Yeah. Now, some people are just not cut out for it, Rich, and it's a brave man to admit that. Now, you went to the Tigers after the Mets. How did you feel about getting traded? You were probably glad just to get out of there.
Well, Joe McDonough wanted to sign me, give me a 3-year deal, and I said, Joe, I like you, Joe, but Joe, I got to leave.
Yeah.
So they traded me to the Tigers, and I went over to Detroit. I loved Detroit. Sparky was a good guy to play for. You can tell that club was going to be good. Eventually, they win the World Series in '84. But, the young guys, Gibson, Jack Morris, Whitaker, Trammell, you could tell that club was going to gel. which they did in 84. Mm-hmm. They won, they started off in first place and never lost first place. But Detroit was a good town. Tiger Stadium was a great old ballpark.
Classic, definitely.
I played in some old ballparks, which are really, really, you're never going to see them anymore.
Forbes Field. Right.
Fenway Park. Tiger Stadium. You're never going to see them anymore.
No. They're all retro throwback ballparks now. None of the classics are left except Wrigley and Fenway. And even Dodger Stadium's looked upon as an old ballpark, and that's not that old to me. But you were shifted back to first base with Detroit because they traded away a guy named Jason Thompson, who was playing first base for them at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got hurt in Detroit, though, too.
I sprained my ankle. I was out for the last 2 months of the season. It's funny, I had 82 RBIs. Beginning of August. I had a heck of a year going. I slid into second base in Minnesota, sprained my ankle, and I think I had two at-bats the rest of the season. But like I said, I like Detroit. I played first, I played third, I DH'd. And like I said, Sparky was a good guy to play for.
Well,
didn't put up on any BS.
No.
Yes. You showed up, you played, and that's the way it should be.
Right.
Nowadays, it's a different ball game now.
It is. You're exactly right. Now, you were eventually moved out of Detroit because they had a guy named Howard Johnson, who Met fans will be familiar with, of course, who was on his way up with Detroit, and they wanted to make room with him there, and they sent you back to Pittsburgh. How'd you feel going back to Pittsburgh? Had to feel pretty good.
I liked it. I went back there for a year and a half, and went back and, I played there 10 years. I went back and that was the year they retired. Willie Stotts retired. I was back there for that, which was nice. And
nice.
Actually, we should have won. We should have gotten the playoffs in the 1 year I went back there. I forget what year it was, but we had a good team. And, we didn't get in the playoffs. The Phillies, 76, I believe it was.
You even filled in right field for Dave Parker for a while.
I think I played right field twice, and when I was out there, I was saying, please don't hit a ball to me. Please don't hit a ball to me.
Yeah.
I there was a couple of balls hit to me. But, when you play infield all these years, and you go in the outfield, and you're saying, what the hell am I doing out here? But I did play the outfield a couple of games.
Sure. Now, after Pittsburgh, you signed as a free agent with the Chicago Cubs, and you were used primarily as a pinch hitter there.
I played a little third first, and I pinched it. But Dallas Green called me on that and said, "You'd like to come over for a couple of years."
Uh-huh.
I come over, and I said, "The Cubs? They haven't won since Christ. Abraham Lincoln was in the White House." I'm saying, "Well, this is going to be my last probably contract. I'm going to go over there." And what happens? We get in the playoffs in '84.
Yeah.
How lucky am I? I was in 11 playoffs.
Yeah, you did pretty well as far as that goes. Richie Hebner with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, you had a little flirtation with the Expos. You didn't go there. You ended up with the Cubs. And how did you know it was the end of the line, Rich?
When Dallas Green called me in and said, "Hey, you still got the shovel? Can you go home and dig graves?"
Oh man!
He says, "Well, I think my semester just ended in baseball."
Yeah,
but I played 18 years in the big leagues. I was 37 years old. I thought I could have played another year, pinch hit or whatever, helped the club out. But I look back. It ended. Everybody's
right.
Semester ends.
Yeah,
my semester ended in Mesa, Arizona, in the spring of 1985, and I went home and I was out of baseball for 2 years until I got back in 1988. But that's the way it ended. Other guys in the same probably way or different ways, but Dallas Green called me in and said,
That's it. Yeah. Now, you spoke a little bit about the grave digging, Rich. People want to hear about that. They want to hear how you got into it, any experiences you have. Let us know.
Well, my grandfather had it, my father had it, then my brother took it over. I dug graves for 35 years, picking shovel. And a lot of people said, "Ah, you played in the big leagues, you didn't dig graves." The heck, I didn't. I did it for 35 years in the off season, and that was my job. I probably kept in good shape doing that, but I did it for a long, long time, and you wouldn't believe what I do in the off season now.
What is it?
I work in a funeral home. I drive the hearse.
So you sort of didn't stray from your past experience. You're sort of in the same business. Yeah, go ahead.
I just tell people now I love being around stiffs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Instead of digging the hole for them, you're driving them over to the hole now.
Well, let me tell you, I got the most quietest job in the world. I have no complaints. It's not like baseball. The sun's in my eyes. The umpire stinks. Yeah. The ball took a bad hop. I got a job. No one says anything.
Perfect. Yeah. Nobody bugging you for directions. You're on your own.
I've been working the funeral home for about 12 years now. So it's a friend of mine owns 3 funeral homes. So I stay busy. I drive the hearse. I tell people I'm the last to give you a ride.
Exactly. Oh, beautiful. Now you're hitting coach for the Buffalo Bisons, who now belong to the Blue Jays. What's a day like for you there?
Well, I get there around probably 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I go in the cage with some guys, and we have batting practice, and we play the game. So it's a lot of work, a lot of communication.
Yeah.
A lot of talking to the guys, and Toronto's a good organization. I've been in this organization for a while now, and it's good people. You know, they made a lot of trades last year. They got rid of a lot of minor league players for the players they picked up from in July last year.
But right.
It's a good organization. I enjoy it. Buffalo's a nice town. The people that run this club is first class. And this is my third year in Buffalo.
So everything's working out well?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine with me.
Beautiful.
Triple-A. I've been in Triple-A 12 years now. And I enjoy it. I enjoy guys getting a call going to big leagues and watching their faces smile and go, especially if it's their first time.
Oh, boy.
And they go up and go, oh, boy, I'm going to big leagues.
Yeah.
Which is great. That's the way it should be.
Exactly. Well, Richie Hebner, it's been an honor and a pleasure speaking with you tonight. I thank you for taking part out of your Sunday night to be with us.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
You take care, and we'll be in touch, Rich.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Richie Hebner, folks. Next up, we'll talk to the former Major League second baseman Brett Boone about his new book, Home Game. So stick around, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this beautiful Sunday evening. I hope you had a great weekend. Summer's coming up fast. Memorial Day weekend next weekend. It'll always be in the summer. So don't worry about that. I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. We're waiting to hear from Brett Boone, trying to get him on the line. And until then, I'll talk to you about something that people may not know too much about. And that's in Babylon, Long Island, the Argyle Hotel, which is long since gone, was on the, the west side of the lake, if you're down at the park. And it was the home to the New York Cuban Giants, who were prided as the first Negro League ball club. And they came from the staff of the Argyle Hotel. One guy in the Hall of Fame is a guy named by the name of Saul White, who really made Babylon's Argyle Hotel the birthplace of black baseball. And I'll read an article to you that was in the Newsday a while ago, written by the great Steve Marcus, and it's about Saul White and the Argyle Hotel. King Solomon White was a forgotten man who played in a segregated league. After he died in Central Islip in 1955, his remains were buried in an unmarked pauper's grave on Staten Island. White emerged from obscurity 51 years later when he was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2006. Saul White not only was a central figure at the dawn of Negro League baseball, a game rich with talented players who were denied access to the mainstream of America's game, but also was a member of what is believed to be the first professional African-American team formed in Babylon Village on Long Island's South Shore. In a career that started in 1887 and ran through 1926, White was an infielder, manager, and executive who chronicled history. He nearly became lost in it. But his past finally was recognized after a special Negro League committee was formed by the Cooperstown Shrine in 2001 to research deserving candidates whose legend did not rise to the likes of those of previous inducted Satchel Paige or Josh Gibson. Brett's on the line? All right. We'll go to Brett Boone right now. Our next guest, three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove winner, two-time Silver Slugger Award winner. His new book is called Home Game, Big League Stories from My Life in Baseball's First Family, and we're honored to welcome in Brett Boone to Sports Talk 1240. Hey, Brett.
How you doing?
Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
You
just done a pool party.
Ah, okay, yeah. Not that warm over here yet.
you know what? Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm in San Diego.
Gee. You grew up in California, Brett. Who were your favorite teams and your favorite players growing up?
Well, no, I actually, as a youngster, I grew up in Jersey.
Okay.
Through eighth grade when Dad was playing in Philly, and then my high school, college, I was in Southern California.
Okay.
And so growing up, it was whoever my dad was playing for was my favorite team.
Gotcha.
I really didn't have a favorite team. And people ask me all the time, who was your favorite player? I didn't have a favorite player. I loved them all. You know, just being around the guys as a kid. At the time you take it for granted. It's not that big of a deal. It's just I go to work with my dad. This is his job. And I just happened to get to hang out with Pete Rose and Mike Schmidt and Steve Carlton and Reggie Jackson. And it was no big deal to me. But looking back on my childhood, how cool and how unique of a childhood I got to have.
Definitely, yeah. Hanging out in the Phillies clubhouse with the likes of Pete Jr., your brother Aaron, Ryan Lazinski, Mark McGraw. That must have been something. Now, I read on Wikipedia, Brett, that the Boone clan is related to Daniel Boone. Is that correct, or is that a joke?
You know, I did a luncheon yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
I was in Seattle, and that question got brought up. And I said, I think I am, because I've been told four or five times, but I've never gone back, and done the family tree deal. So I'm just going to take it This is one more person telling me, so I'm just
sure.
going to claim it.
Yeah, all right. Why not?
Let's, I'm a frontiersman.
Let's go with it. Yeah, it works. Now, for those folks who are not familiar with the Boone family, it's an all-star family. These guys were all-stars. Bob Boone was a catcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, the California Angels, and the Kansas City Royals from 72 to 90, and later a manager with the Royals in Cincinnati. His dad, Brett's grandfather, is Ray Boone, who was an infielder for the Indians, Tigers, White Sox, Kansas City A's, Milwaukee Braves, and Boston Red Sox. And, of course, now you have Aaron and Brett. Now, your grandfather played with Ted Williams, correct?
He did, and they actually went to the same high school, Hoover High.
In San Diego.
In San Diego.
Right.
Ted was a few years older than him. So I don't know if they actually played together, but they ended up playing together my grandfather's, I think, final year in Boston. So they did play together there. He could some kind of wear me out about the Ted Williams stories. I've heard every Ted Williams story 20 times over.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, but I've had Claudia Williams on the program. She's had a heck of a lot of good stories, too, but I don't think there's a bad Ted Williams story out there. Now
one of the greatest.
Definitely. We're speaking of Brett Boone tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Playing for the Seattle Mariners coming up, you played for one of the great managers in our time, Lou Piniella. Talk to us a little bit about Lou.
Oh, they broke the mold.
Yeah.
When he was born, I don't know if there'll ever be another Lou. Actually, our relationship, he came over to the Mariners in 93. I broke in 92. And in 93, Lou was my manager in Seattle. And, man, we had some let's say disagreements, and got off to a real rocky start. By the end of the 93 season, we were on very good terms. And then my second tenure in Seattle from 01 through 05, he's one of my favorite, not only is my favorite manager ever, but he's one of my favorite guys. He's just, Lou's Lou. And
yeah.
Everybody's seen him on the field and his antics and all that stuff. But behind that is a kind-hearted guy that cares. But when he gets out there, he's fiery, boy. But if he respects you as a man and as a player, he'll go through a wall for you.
Now, you played Brett also with Ken Griffey Jr., who, as we all know, is going into the Hall of Fame this year. You also played with Edgar Martinez and Omar Vizquel. Those guys uh-huh. deserving of Cooperstown as well?
Edgar and Omar?
Yeah.
It's so tough. I'm not a big fan of the Hall of Fame to begin with.
Okay.
And I think it's ridiculous. I think, they barely allow one person in a year. There's so many people that should be in that aren't. A perfect example is Ken Griffey, who is not the greatest player I've ever played against. He is definitely by far the greatest player I've ever played with
okay.
on a team. How can he get 99.7? I want to know the three votes.
Exactly.
The three people that didn't vote for him. That, to me, is what's wrong with the Hall of Fame. It's like, I look back to the Robbie Alomar. How is he a second ballot? It's stuff like that kind of enrages me, but it just makes me really lose confidence in the system. And there's so many guys right now on the outside looking in. Obviously, our era was tainted, but I think you got to look at an era as an era, and the greatest of the greats of that time should be in the Hall of Fame. That being said, my first shortstop in the big leagues was Omar Vizquel, and obviously one of the greatest defenders in the game's history. Edgar, if it weren't for injuries that Edgar had, one of the greatest right-handed hitters of our time. I put him right there with Manny Ramirez and Juan Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
Just some of the great greats. Mike Piazza for a period was unbelievable. Jeff Bagwell. So I put Edgar as one of the elite right-handed hitters of our time.
Great.
whether he's going to get in or not, it's going to be tough just because it's such a numbers game. And, you know, the magic, he doesn't have the magic numbers of 3,000 hits and, you know, the 500 home runs and all that stuff. But he's actually one of my best friends and was definitely one of my favorite teammates all the time. If I had a vote, I would vote for him just because of how great he was when he was healthy. But I don't know. It's going to be tough. From Omar's standpoint, they're going to have to look at him as kind of an Ozzie Smith-type situation. Obviously, he's one of the best shortstops of our time, definitely of our time. And so I think they're both kind of on the fence. Like I said, if I had a vote, I would put Edgar in, just not only because he's my good buddy, but because I just learned so much from him. And to watch him hit was like a work of art, because he wasn't the Griffey that just was born with super talent. You know, Griffey to me was kind of like a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan. They were just born better than us. Whereas Edgar had obviously had a ton of ability, but he was an artist. And if I had a vote, I'd put Edgar in, but it's going to be tough just from a number standpoint.
Right. And as you say, Brett, I agree that the system certainly is flawed and could use some revising. Now, you played in Atlanta. You played for another Hall of Famer, Bobby Cox. You had some things to say about Bobby in the book. Let's talk a little bit about Bobby Cox.
Well, first of all, Bobby, I like Bobby. Bobby's a good man. He's a Hall of Fame manager in my eyes. And during our tenure, I was only there for a year. We didn't see eye to eye on a lot of on some things. It doesn't mean that I didn't respect him, and I didn't like him as a manager. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, and I've seen Bobby on several occasions recently, just through charity events and stuff like that. And I don't want to, by no means in the book did I want to taint him saying this or that. All I said in the book basically was we had our differences.
Right.
World Series game two. You know, I come to the ballpark and I've got to check my name in the lineup. I thought at that point in my career I wouldn't have to check.
Exactly, yeah.
But at the same time, I have a ton of respect for Bobby Cox. He's a good man, and I think his managerial career speaks for itself.
You moved on, and you came back to Seattle. How was it coming back to Seattle, Brett?
It was very strange.
Okay.
You know, I didn't know what to expect. I knew Safeco Field was a big ballpark. And basically, I was in a situation where I'd hurt my knee in 2000. And San Diego had told me they were going to pick up my option. I had an option year in my contract. And just to rest it for the last 6-7 weeks, I was having a good power year. Mm-hmm. But they said, you know what, we're in last place. Just get this thing right for next year, and we're going to pick up your option. Then all of a sudden, at the end of the year, they didn't pick up my option. Thinking, oh, you're going to do better in the open market. Well, I think the opposite hit. It was basically, why wouldn't they pick up his option? There's got to be something more to this knee thing. And I was plagued with that. And basically, Lou stepped up to the plate, and Seattle came in and offered me a 2-year contract, lower than I wanted. And I told my agent, I said, you know what, let's take the 1-year deal and go play like hell. And, looking back on it, it's the best move I ever made. And the rest is kind of history. You know, I got to play with the greatest regular season team of all time in 2001.
Right.
But I got to play in a city that embraced me and still to this day embraces me, and I loved it, and I'll never forget my time in Seattle. So it went from a kind of a curse being out. I felt like I was kind of dangling in the wind to being a blessing.
Wonderful. Yeah, great place, Seattle. Now, you played with some great ball players there. You played with John Olerud, who to me is one of the great hitters of that era.
Not only is Johnny that, Johnny's one of the greatest human beings I've ever met.
Tell us a little bit about Olerud then.
He's just, he's goofy. He's, and Johnny won't even mind me saying it. He's nerdy. He'll come in with his backpack just in La La Land, and he's such a wonderful human being and such a good guy. Batting titles aside, this guy was just a constant.
saved my butt a ton of times at first base when he made my bad throws look like they hit him right in the chest. Great defender. And like I said, first and foremost, what a wonderful guy.
Well, we had him with the Mets, Brett, if you remember that. He had some great years here.
Oh,
you know,
he was
the fans
great
loved
player.
Him.
I don't mean to diminish. You know, I just, the human being, when I think of John Oliver, yes, it goes without saying he was a great hitter, but just the person he was really had an impact on me.
Right. A tremendous glove. The Mets had that infield with Olerud, Alfonso, Ordonez, and Ventura around at third. I believe they were on Sports Illustrated that year. And, Olerud, tremendous guy. Now,
Awesome.
How about Ichiro Suzuki?
Piece of work. Knows more English than he lets on. Met Ichiro, had no idea what to expect. No idea. That, I remember that first big training. It was just Ichiro mania. Billion.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like there were thousands of reporters there every day. We're like, who is this little guy
with
his first name on his back? And I don't think he hit a ball to the left of the shortstop the entire spring. And I remember Lou going, you know, because Lou's catchphrase is calls everybody son. And he would say, son, could you show me that you can pull a ball? And he just looked at Lou and said, no. And then once the season started, he ended up hitting .350 for us, and very charismatic, very funny, some of the best eye-hand coordination I've ever seen, and he's still going. You know,
he sure is.
Who knows how many hits he has, but between Japan and the United States, but obviously a heck of a player.
Sure is. It's great you gave us some insight into the guy because he is kind of mysterious. So I'm sure the listeners appreciate that, Brett. Got Brett Bruin with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, you took up three lockers in Seattle. Is that true?
That is true. That is true.
What, one for your bats?
One was for a guest, and one was for my other guest.
Okay. Yeah.
Seattle, and that's what I have such fond memories. I mean, I had the persona of being this aloof, brash, cocky guy. It was mostly a shtick, you know, and it was for my teammates. And they expected me to be a certain way. They expected me to come into the clubhouse and say, Boone's here, we can start. Now everybody started laughing. And that was my role in that clubhouse. You know, we had Mike Cameron in that clubhouse, who's a strong personality, also one of my best buddies.
Yeah.
But more so than not, it was just for the effect. To see what people would do, and everybody embraced it in Seattle. And you know, if you interviewed the guys in the clubhouse, they'd tell you how much fun that particular group of guys had. And yeah, I ended up having the three lockers at the end. You know, most of the guys had the veteran guys. You know, Edgar and myself, and Olerud and Buehner, and Jamie Moore. Everybody had two lockers, but I said I was on the end, so I'm like, well, that third one's open too. So I took
sure.
and the third one, I really did. I put all my bats in there.
Why not? Now, though, tell us about your time with the Mets, Brett. What made you decide to come to the Mets? How did you get there?
Well, I was in 2005, and I was kind of having a rough year. Team was having a rough year. We're getting rid of guys the year before Edgar left, and they put Johnny Olerud on waivers. Dan Wilson retired. So I knew that team was going in a different direction, and I knew my tenure was coming to an end in Seattle. And I didn't have a good year at all that year. And I just kind of contemplated that offseason, decided, you know, I'm going to have to go. You know, I was getting up there in age, and I was going to go out to play under a one-year contract. Willie Randolph was the manager, and the Mets came and said, we'll give you an opportunity. And took the opportunity, went to spring training, and something inside me just wasn't there. You know, I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. I think at the time it was Jose Reyes. He was just a kid, you know, in this shortstop, and we're going through drills, and I'm watching this kid shagging fly balls in the outfield, this young shortstop, with just a huge smile and just the passion of a 12-year-old. Like, I am just so happy to be in, and I didn't have that feeling anymore. I'd had that my whole life. And I just talked to my dad one night and told him I was going to retire. Everybody thought I was crazy. And I walked into Willie's office. I told him. He said, what
He said, "You're looking good. What is going on?" And I said, "I just don't have it in here anymore." You know,
yeah.
Pointing to my heart. And he said, "I understand." He said, "I got to that point one time. We had a press conference. I cried and went home."
Yeah.
And then I did some soul searching. You know, at that time I was going through some personal problems, you know, some family situation with now to be my ex. And I decided that I needed to clean up my act, get back in shape. I ended up missing a year and came back with the Washington Nationals in 2008 because, for me, I didn't have any closure. It
right.
was kind of dangling out there, like, what if? I didn't want to have those what ifs hanging over me for the rest of my life. So I got in the best shape I possibly could, went to the Jim Bowden, who was my general manager in Cincinnati, gave me an opportunity in Washington. I went there, went through a full spring training after missing a year. And it was finally, I had gotten old, and it was tough just taking the field for 9 innings and
yeah.
playing a day game after a night game. And I remember Jim Bowden called me after a game, and we were playing. Well, at the end of the spring, I said, "I need more time. I'm not ready to break camp." I said, "Let me go to Columbus and see how I feel after a couple weeks." Went down there, kind of held my own, but it was tough for me. I mean, my body was hurting, and I remember the phone call, and he said, "What can you give me?" And I said, "Well, I can probably give you 10 or 12 homers. I can probably hit you 260, 270. I can still turn two as good as anybody in the world, but I've lost a step
mm-hmm.
both ways in the field." And he said, "Well, that's better than what we got. Come on up." And I said, "Well, no." And I'm going to fly home and discuss this with my family. Went home, discussed it, and decided, you know, I thought at that time Washington was kind of new on the scene. And I had looked at the team and I said, "This team's going to lose 100 games.
Yeah, right.
And they did.
Yeah.
And it was tough enough being at my peak and winning all the time with the Mariners. That's tough enough. This game is so hard. But to be... go in there, a shell of what I once was, and lose 100 games. It didn't sound like a lot of fun for me.
No.
So that's when I decided to retire officially. And, you know, it was okay. All the training I went through that off season, and I could put my head on the pillow and go, I had some closure, and I knew it was over.
Exactly. Great point. Now, you talk a little bit in the book, Brett, about Canseco and his allegations that he made in that book, Juiced.
Uh-huh.
Give us a little insight into the Canseco allegations.
Well, it didn't happen.
Right.
The only word, the most I've ever talked to Jose is, "Hey, you know, he hit a double. I'd say, hey, Jose, what's up? Hey, Boney, how you doing?" That's as much as we've ever spoken. You know, there were a lot of allegations about a lot of people, you know, and a lot of them ended
up... That's what kept Piazza out of Cooperstown.
Yeah, and I said to him, or I didn't say to him, I'm sorry. I didn't have to say anything because, thank goodness, Matt Lauer did his research, and Jose had claimed he was with the Angels that year in 2001 where he claimed he hit a double, he was on second base, and he had a conversation with me.
Right.
About PEDs, and... you know, I said something to him like, "Shh, don't tell anybody," or something silly like that. Like I would say that to somebody I don't know. And thank goodness Matt Lauer did his research. And in 2001, Jose Canseco never reached second base against us in Seattle when we
yeah.
played him that spring.
There you go.
So now all of a sudden Jose was, you know, fumbling. Well, maybe as we were running off the field. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, that's what I would do. Hey, Jose.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about something. So... you know, he put his own foot in his own mouth, and but the allegations are there. They've always been around me. They've been around a lot of us,
mm-hmm.
and people are always going to speculate, and that's not going to go away. So, you know, it's here we are in 2016, and we're still talking about it. The game's thriving. I think it's at its peak right now. I think that reflects in the players' salaries right now. They've cleaned up the game, which I think is great. Players are held to a very high accountability. And I know with the testing program, because my last 3 years, you know, I was under that testing program, and it's rigorous. I mean, it's as stern as any sport out there. So I think it's great for the game. They cleaned it up. I think Bud Selig did a great job. And I think the game right now is thriving. And I'll, you know, that's my passion. I'll always be a fan. And, you know, I keep up to date even today.
Now, you did a little managing in Beloit. Now, was that the Snappers?
That was.
Yeah.
It was fun. I worked for the A's for 2 years, and I was basically special assistant. They always laughed at what my title was. And I used to say, I'm just a mentor.
Yeah.
So basically, I would go to all the minor league affiliates and work with all the kids, and I was their buddy. You know, they wanted to know Brett Boone stories and talk the game, and I really enjoyed that. And I ended up, you know, really finding myself pulling so hard for each guy. You know, some guys I knew had a chance to be big leaguers, some guys I didn't, but I didn't kind of waver. You know, I worked as hard as I could with all of them. And I really enjoyed those 2 years with Oakland. I got a chance to step in and manage a few games on two different occasions. And that was interesting because being in third, you know, in the minor leagues, you don't manage from the dugout and have, you know, five coaches around you. You got to run the game and coach third base. So that was a little bit of a challenge. It was something I'd never done before, but it was interesting. It was educational, and I had a good time. And like I said, my time with Oakland, they were great to me. I did it for 2 years, and this year I've just got a lot going on, you know, with the book, and I've got several other business endeavors going on. So I decided to take this year off. Who knows what the future holds for me, baseball-wise.
Right.
But it'll always be my passion, and hopefully one day I'll be back, you know, helping kids.
Definitely. Well, Brett, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to be with us. The new book from Brett Boone, some tremendous stories about his family and about his career in the bigs. Home game, big league stories from my life in baseball's first family, and that's Brett Boone. Thanks for being with us, Brett.
Good, and I think you can get it. See, I feel weird doing this. I've never promoted anything.
Go right ahead. I'm a shameless self-promoter.
I think it's BrettBooneBook.com is where you can find it online. And I think it's at all the Barnes & Nobles and Targets and all the bookstores. But it's BrettBooneBook.com.
BrettBooneBook.com. Got it. Okay, sounds good.
And that's the last time I'll plug anything. But I appreciate you having me on.
No worries, Brett. Thanks for being with us. Boone, folks. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Richie Hebner and Brett Boone, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you for joining us tonight. Stay tuned for hour number two with Eric Getzoff on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you Sunday, June 12th. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.